Welcome to Philosophy Club, where lifelong friends discuss life's questions.
Let's do it.
All right, Ben, do you want to lay that out for us?
Yeah, so this was a question that was brought up by someone not in Philosophy Club, but when we were hanging out the other week, they asked, do people with very high IQs have any obligation to society up and beyond what maybe less intelligent people do?
Mm-hmm. The Spider-Man question, does great power
come with responsibility?
Yeah. My instinct is no.
My instinct is also no.
Really? I think we have an obligation merely not to harm other people. Merely not to be a detriment to society, essentially. I don't think we have any obligation to go out of our way to help society.
So you don't think we have any sort of positive moral obligation? Because I think that might be...
On the societal level, I think no. In terms of like the way our laws ought to be, I think it's probably wrong to codify laws that impose.
Well, I don't think we're talking about like worse things.
Positive morality. On the individual level, there's the classic thought experiment of like if you pass by the drowning kid, and you've got an expensive suit on, and you could easily save this drowning kid, but you'll ruin your expensive suit in the process. Do you have like an obligation to jump in and save this drowning kid? And like our gut is that the answer is like yes, you do. But I just don't know. Like that's my intuition is that in that case also yes. But I think that runs into the slippery slope problem of like, well, at any given moment in time, each of us could be working a few extra hours and then sending extra money. We could be sending all of our money to organizations. Like there are people who are dying of hunger around the world. Like those commercials you see like for $2 a day you could, you know, feed a kid in Africa. And that's likely true. Like we are in a position of extreme privilege and could do significantly more. And the idea that like just because you can, you ought to seems extreme to me.
Well, what about a smaller level? Well, this is a dumb aside, but I read an article in The Economist earlier this week about how obesity is becoming an increasing problem, even in very poor countries. But what if, instead at a societal level, it's like, it doesn't seem unreasonable that a person of very high IQ ought to put a little more thought into, like, their relationship with their spouse or their parents or their siblings, and be slightly better at it or more thoughtful at it than if they were dumber, and vice versa. At the very other end, like you, there's probably a different set of expectations that you would have for a sibling who is of very, very low intelligence that you would expect that they don't take, aren't as like thoughtful, or you would make some, you'd be like, oh, okay, it's okay that they didn't do X, Y, or Z, or we're rude or something like this because they just can't think through all the consequences of it. So if that's true on one end, shouldn't it be true on the other end that a very smart person ought to be kinder and better?
So, first of all, I don't know necessarily that I think that's true. Broadly speaking, I think my understanding of morality is that it's wrong to either try to harm other people or to willfully ignore or not consider the harms you might do to other people. So it may be the case that a more intelligent person is likely more aware of the ways in which they may harm other people, and to like willfully ignore those would be wrong. So maybe they have a higher burden there, but I don't think it would be the case that because they can think of like 10 more ways where they could improve. Like if I can only think of one way to like improve the livelihood of my family, but Ben can think of 10 ways because he's smarter than I am, does that mean he's more obligated to improve the livelihood of his family? I don't think so at all. No. I don't think And to bring it, like, I don't think Spider-Man has any greater obligation to be Spider-Man than he does a pizza delivery guy.
Interesting.
He only has an obligation not to become a super villain. Or also not to trip someone walking down the street. Like, he has to, he remains, he continues to have an obligation not to hurt other people. I don't think he has, because he's greater abled, any greater obligation to help other people.
Is it morally good for Anton to take on
yes.
greater obligation?
Yes, it is.
So from, like, a purely economist perspective, like, if whether it, even if he's choosing not to, like, if like helping people that extra bit is worth 10, then not choosing them is still 10 less. Whether you're, and like, let's say tripping someone is like minus 10, it's still the same problem.
I don't think I believe opportunity cost functions in morality in that way.
That's fair. I don't really think it does either. Okay. throw that out. I don't know. It's like, so then I guess a question to you is, like, why bother going to law school? Why?
I want to be not merely a bad person, but a good person. I don't think I have any obligation to do so. But I think it's better. It's still a positive thing for me to do it. It's just not a negative thing for me not to do it.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that the person who, a person of greater intelligence, it's more better for them to, use that intelligence for good.
Yes.
But not bad for them to refrain from doing so and just do live an otherwise ordinary life.
Yes. That's my opinion on this.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could almost buy that just because it seems only barely different from not having a moral obligation, because it's still better for them. But
right. But I don't think better equals obligatory, right? It just means it's better. Right, like if I could take a job that pays me $20, or I can take a job that pays me $18, would I? There's no obligation to take the $20 job. It's just better. If for some other reason, if I have some reason to prefer the $18 job, maybe it's just simply like I like the people I work with a little bit better. I'm not doing anything wrong by taking that one opposed to the $20 job. Like, more of something does not impart an obligation, I don't think. More of any value, I don't know that necessarily imparts an obligation.
So then, because I've thought about this question in a different way, of what if you are born with some kind of privilege in society? Are you then obligated to use that for the betterment of some society to at least a degree?
I still think no. I think it's good if you do, and you probably have a greater ability to do good. Or at least, yeah, it may be easier for you to impact society in a beneficial way. But I don't think you have an obligation to. You do have an obligation. I think a person who's born in a position of privilege is born with greater opportunities for good or ill. You have an obligation not to use those greater opportunities for ill, but you have no obligation to use those opportunities for greater good.
Mm. But isn't someone born with privilege and ability who leaves, like, an ordinary, somewhat dissolute life, isn't that more bad than someone without ability and privilege who leaves an ordinary and dissolute life?
No.
I guess that's fair.
Ben, do you have thoughts on this?
I'm still caught up a little bit. Again, I don't want to get too lost in the shallow pond problem, because I know, like, the slippery slope and where that leads. But, like, if you see someone getting violently assaulted on the street and you have a taser that you know can incapacitate the attacker without putting you in harm's way, and you choose not to do anything, that certainly feels wrong.
Well, unless they're a cop. Keep going.
That is a reference to another episode that you won't get if you've only listened to this one. That feels like a distinct moral wrong.
Potentially. So I guess, and I guess maybe we're running into a heat problem with the slippery slope here.
About a topic, because I think within a heap.
You're right. Yeah, maybe. Because the idea here is that at no cost, you can do this good. And so, yes, the question then is if at no cost, you can do a good, are you obligated to do so? Or if you, maybe it's if at no cost, you can prevent a harm. Because the question is not like, this question is never posed as like, at no cost to yourself, you can make your middle class neighbor like wealthier. Or like at no cost to yourself, like no one ever suggests you have an obligation to do something at no cost that's merely good. Only that you have an obligation if there's at no cost to prevent a harm, or at low cost, sufficiently low cost. And I think that there is potentially something there, right? So I may be willing to concede that there is a heap in point at which at a sufficiently low cost, and it's just that our intuition is that at a sufficiently low cost, you do have an obligation to prevent a harm, right? So that's the shallow pond. That's this person who you can tase. But at no point, I think that it falls apart as soon as you suggest that at sufficiently low cost, you have an obligation to improve things.
So what?
Why does that happen? Like if we look at this like a mathematical formula, it seems like it ought to be the case that low cost plus like net positive for society equals obligation. That only works when you're on the negative end of things and not when you're on the positive. So like if I have an empty lot of land and I could very, very easily convert it into a park, great. Like a public park or something, that would be a very wonderful thing for me to do. It would be great, but I'm certainly under no obligation to do so. But if someone is drowning in a shallow pond, a child is, and I can go over there and save them easily at very low cost myself, it does seem like I have an obligation. And that, I think, is interesting, at least. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
So you're saying that we have a moral obligation to prevent harm at low cost, but not to give benefit at low cost.
I think so.
I guess my first thought is like if someone's starving and you give them a sandwich, are you preventing harm or giving a benefit?
Preventing a harm.
Preventing harm.
What if they're not quite as starving as before? It seems like in any case, it's always kind of the same. It's just how you phrase it.
Potentially, but like I guess the idea of like if someone is starving, there's this sort of supposition that like we're supposing that this person is somehow unable to help themselves. Like someone is in a position where they are incapable of helping themselves and is suffering this great harm that you have this obligation to step in potentially. If you're able to at relatively low cost. Whereas if that's not a situation, like if Ben just hasn't eaten breakfast, but like that was kind of like, he just decided to skip breakfast for the day. And so he's like grumbling about being hungry, you know, at the office, like his neighbor has no obligation to give Ben a sandwich. It might be a good thing to do, because it would impart a benefit on Ben, but there's no real like harm that Ben is unable to address himself that is being solved.
All right. So let's say that for the sake of argument, Michael Powell is a 6 out of 10 happiness on average.
Mm-hmm.
And God comes down and says, Ben, there's a light switch. And if you go over there and flick it, he will become an 8 out of 10 happiness on average.
Mm-hmm.
All I have to do is flick the light switch. Am I morally obligated to do so?
I think no.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
My gut says no. It's good for you to do so, but I don't think it's you are under any obligation to do so. Now, if we flip it and say that I'm at a -6 and you can flip a switch and take me to a -4, you may have an obligation to do that. What?
This is breaking down.
Because that's the if someone is be if I walk in down an alley with my taser and I see that someone's being viciously beaten and I can stop that, we seem to be suggesting I have an obligation to do so. And I think probably that's true. However, if I'm, man, I don't know. Like, if I'm walking down the alley and I'm enjoying a candy bar and I walk past someone else, totally fine, who just simply does not have a candy bar, I'm under no obligation to share it, to give them half, even though it would maybe improve their day. It's good if I do, but I certainly don't seem to have any obligation to do so.
So I think the other thing at play is the exceptional nature of the scenario. Is that if it's that it's also weird if someone's drowning in a pond, and that's an exceptional thing. That I think plays into it. Yeah, because it won't be as though you're habitually called upon this. Like, you could imagine that they're because you don't have the obligation to, after you save the child's, like, continue walking by that pond or make an unconscious effort to walk more often by that pond to prevent someone from potentially drowning in it. Let's say that you don't even normally walk by that pond, and but the subway stop that you ordinarily get off on is closed, and so you had to get off on a stop that was less convenient, and you had to walk by there. And then for the rest of, and it was only closed for like a day, so you could presumably never walk by that pond again on your ordinary course of your life, not because you're really choosing not to, but because you're not actively choosing to. Not only you incur like a moral obligation to walk by that pond after having seen someone almost drown in it.
I agree. Really... I think you can even simplify the situation. I think you're onto something here about this being an unusual one-off thing, because I think if you're walking by a pond and you save a drowning infant, and then you hand it back to the mother and someone says, thank you, there's a different, thank God you're here. Every other week, there's a new infant drowning in this pond. You don't have any obligation to regularly go by the pond to make sure it doesn't happen again. you know, like, finding out that a harm is routinely happening does not impart an obligation, but a one-off ability to do it does seem to.
It's really funny. Okay. So you don't incur the obligation to become the lifeguard once you see someone drowning.
And so Spider-Man may, when he passes by the alley and sees the old lady getting her purse snatched, it actually might be reasonable to say that Spider-Man has the obligation then to be Spider-Man and to use his ability to stop it. However, I don't know that it's reasonable to say that Spider-Man has an obligation to go prowling the streets looking for danger so that he can stop it.
Does this at all conflict with what you were talking about at the beginning? You said in terms of how you view morality, it's not doing harm to people and not willingly, what was the second?
Willfully ignoring the potential harms your actions may have.
Is there any overlap between this of, well, now you know there's something bad happening and you're kind of willfully, you're not doing anything about it, which feels like you're willfully ignoring it.
So like if Oscar Schindler had saved one Jew and then was aware of his ability to save many, many more, but did not do so, would we say that he was doing something wrong after that first point?
I mean, if he had sold that pen.
Well, I guess so that example brings the potential costs back into it, because there's obviously
right.
a huge cost if he's discovered for what he's doing.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's part of why we seem to revere his action as being so heroic, is he did it at great personal cost. Both it's in terms of its actual consequence, in terms of the life saved, and in terms of the danger at which he put himself in order to do it. Likewise, that's why Spider-Man's actions are far more heroic when he's stopping the Green Goblin than when he's stopping random mugger on the street from stealing a purse. Like, both are good, but one of them is at much higher risk to yourself.
Okay, well, this is interesting. So back to my happiness light switch example. So scenario one, he says you can just walk across the room, go flip the switch. Michael will be 2%, 2 points happier, so 6 to 8. Navi says, same situation, except it's going to impart a very painful but completely harmless electric shock when you do it. So
Is it a better thing? Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, is it better now? So let's say, and I'm not convinced that this is true, that I'm under no moral obligation to do so. But we do think it's a good thing either way if I did so. Is it better in one of those scenarios?
I mean, I think yes, actually. That's both my intuition and, like, there's this may not be convincing for you as a non-theist, but like there's a passage in the Bible where there's this almsgiving going on, and the poor woman comes and gives like her only 3 coins, as opposed to the rich man who gives like hundreds. And Jesus says she's given far more because it cost her so much more to give that. And that seems to make immediate sense. Do you guys know what I mean there? Again, maybe that's just coming from the theist perspective, but the idea that to do good at great personal cost is not like the good done is not necessarily measured by the outcome, but in part by what it costs you on a personal level. In fact, I think a better way to phrase it then is actually I'm inclined to believe this because it fits with my existing system of morality, is that the quality of the goodness is actually measured by the will which it took to do the act, the will behind the act. And so the woman who is giving everything, her will is to give everything, she to do all she can do. Whereas the rich man who's giving $100,000, his will is to give, you know, the 2% that of his wealth to do a lot of good. But his will is, like, she's trying to do everything she possibly can. He's just trying to do something he can do. So Ben, when your will to flip the switch, you're just trying to do something good. When you're trying to do something good, even at personal cost, that's a much harder ask. So the will is much stronger there.
Okay, now this, all right, situation 3. There's a second light switch that not only will it not shock me, but it will make both of us 2 points happier. So now I'm making you and I happier at no personal cost. Is it better for me to flip the one that gives me a cost and doesn't give me an improvement?
No, because we don't seem to think there's no cost. Like that seems like you're taking on unnecessary cost. You've imposed, self-imposed cost there. It wasn't a real cost. You've imposed cost.
That makes sense. So you don't have a moral obligation to do something dumb.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so now back in the original scenario, both switches exist. There's the one that doesn't cause me any harm, and then the one that it gives me a shock, and we're saying it's better if I do the one that gives me the shock, but that's also dumb.
It's only better if the two scenarios are separate. As soon as you throw them together, it's just nonsensical to go with the shock. You're incurring a harm when you don't need to.
Unless you don't know what to give up for Lent.
Well, Lent I don't think is a moral exercise. I mean, it's an exercise, but not one that actually imparts any morality.
Yeah, good point.
It's like it's like lifting weights, but for your conscience, I think, or your resilience, maybe. I don't know. Your decision making.
So if we agreed that part of obligation is the exceptional nature of a scenario, you should first ask the question to God if He intends to offer this again, because that would change whether or not you have a moral obligation to flip the switch or not. But if he says this is the only time I'll ever do this, it seems like now you have an obligation to...
No, I don't think that that's true. Because I think if you will come across a shallow pond and there's an infant drowning, and there's a woman screaming from the side, help, help, somebody help, an infant drowns here every 2 weeks, like that doesn't mean like your obligation goes away in the shallow pond. You still, I think,
okay,
because the situation is novel to you, doesn't necessarily mean that... Or, like, just because you're aware the situation is not novel, but its novelty to you, maybe, is still relevant.
Okay. That makes sense.
It makes it a very good thing that if you choose to continue to go by the pond so that you can try and save further infants. But I don't know that it imparts any obligation or affects the obligation. And the fact that you are now currently pressed with the situation to, like, you don't have to, I guess what we're saying is, if when you are presented with a situation that at low cost prevents a harm, we seem to suggest that there's an obligation, but that you have no obligation to seek out low cost situations in which you may be able to prevent a harm.
So the original question was, if you're of greater intelligence, do you have a greater obligation to society or something like that? So it seems like no, because that sort of thing is not of an exceptional nature. You would need to reorder your whole life to use your intelligence to, like, better benefit society.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I agree. That said, if you're somehow presented with a situation in which you're able to use that intelligence in the moment, like you're presented with in the instance of a situation in which you are able to help in a way that someone else may not be able to, you may have an obligation. Right? So like Spider-Man has an obligation to save the person who falls from the top of the building because he can easily at no cost. If he's walking down the street and Peter Parker sees someone falling from the top of the building and can easily at no cost save them, he has an obligation. You and I do not, because we have the ability to do so.
Yeah. Okay. Where are we going to take this from here?
Are you guys satisfied with that answer? Ben, do you agree?
I'm not satisfied, but I don't really have another avenue to take this necessarily.
Mm.
And just have you guys ever heard of the asymmetry problem in population ethics?
No.
So it goes something like, I'm trying to remember the full details, but it goes something like, all right, if a person exists, we would say good things happening to that person is good, and bad things happening to that person is bad. To take a very simplified approach here. If I'm deciding whether or not to have a kid, and for some reason I know that that child's life will be full of suffering, it seems like a moral good to not have that child. However, if I think that that child will have a great life, I'm not under any moral obligation to bring them into the world. And this feels like the exact same dynamic we've just been talking about. Do you guys have any reaction to that idea?
I think the way you just presented it seems to square with exactly what we've been talking about. The idea that you may have an obligation, if somehow you know, which I think is realistically a stretch, but if somehow you know that this child would have a miserable life, that is on the net negative, that they would be more unhappy with their life as a whole than they are happy with it, then you may have some obligation not to bring them into existence. That may be true. I think we can take it to a much more tangible experience. Like, I think it's morally wrong, the system of, like, factory farming, to knowingly breed and bring about more creatures that will suffer for the entirety of their existence, when you could simply choose to not bring them into existence. But that doesn't mean that you are under any obligation to breed cows that will live happy lives frolicking in a field somewhere. I think that squares exactly with what we've been talking about.
Yeah, and I guess I actually strongly agree with that in this context, but because having a child is great cost to you, like it's one of the most cost-taking on things you can do, and it still doesn't feel good that we're not under moral obligation to do moral good if it's at low cost to us.
Going with the population example, while we think more deeply on it, this is a funny aside. This was a Greek play. I don't even remember if it was called Lysistratus or one of the main characters was Lysistrata. But there's such a thing as a Lysistratic protest, which I don't know if it actually occurred in history. But in this play, there was a ancient Greek play, and in a fictionalized version of the world, The Peloponnesian War had been dragging on for 20 years. That did that. That part was true. But then the women of Athens wanted it to end because they were fed up with it. And so they refused to have sex with their husbands until the end of the war. And it's and they actually taught this to us in one of her courses. And like an aside, it's like, oh, on this broad list of like things you could do to disrupt a government, one of them way down towards the bottom is a Lysistratic protest where people deny sex to their husbands or to their spouses or whatnot based off of this play. And I guess
I think there's a Spike Lee movie that takes that premise and runs with it. I haven't seen this, but I really remember seeing a trailer for some movie where, yeah, like the women in a community aren't happy with something about the men, and so they refuse to have sex with them until they change something. But that's funny. Anyway, sorry, I could be totally wrong. It just rings a bell. But go ahead, continue.
Somewhat connected to the if like choosing not to bring children into a world of immense suffering or whatnot. You could view it in like that lens too. If like or like similar to your cows being raised just for farming, if the children are going to be raised merely to go into this endless war. You could view it maybe in a similar light. I don't know.
Ben, I guess if I'm trying to sympathize with your position here, like I'm trying to imagine. So say if I bring in to work with me a 3-tiered cake and I sit down at my desk with my 3-tiered cake and hog it all to myself. Like, would it be nice for me to share this cake, which I have no need of this, like, excess of cake? Would it be nice for me to share it with my, like, the other people in my office? They aren't going hungry. They don't need it by any stretch. But would it be nice for me to share it? Yes. Do I have any obligation to share it? My gut is no. But at the same token, if I'm at the office water cooler and someone says, did you see Mike brought in a 3-tiered cake and then just like sat at his desk and all, but like that asshole didn't want to like offer to share a little bit? Like that kind of makes sense, actually. Like that outrage makes a little bit of sense. The idea that like there's a certain degree of excess that's so extreme at which like maybe there seems to be some moral obligation potentially. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't seem like a hard and fast obligation, but the outrage there seems at least somewhat justified.
Well, I mean, let's take it even further. So you have one slice of your cake and then throw the rest away instead of sharing it.
Mm.
Again, you've caused no harm, but you've actively prevented pleasure. Like, where I'm getting hung up is what should be the repercussions when following the moral obligation? Like, even in the preventing harm example, I don't think anyone's advocating for if you don't save the child from drowning that there should be legal consequence.
Well, there sometimes are. That's a good Samaritan law. That's what, you know, that's how the Seinfeld series famously ended.
But Seinfeld is not real. But like there are laws, I remember, Ben, I think I may have sent you a picture of this, but like in my criminal law textbook, we read this example of there was this guy who walked into the bathroom and saw that his buddy was assaulting a like 12-year-old girl, and he turned around and walked out of the bathroom and never said anything to anyone about it. His buddy raped and murdered this girl, and then later there was sort of moral outrage that this guy did nothing. He could have very easily at least informed security. At very little cost to himself, he could have intervened in a way that could have potentially saved this kid's life. But legally, at least as the law stood then, there was no obligation, and so he could not be held legally culpable in any. In that example, it's, I think, a useful one. It's like the drowning child, but it's a real situation in which you could have easily prevented a harm, or at least done something to step in. And so multiple states have passed laws that say that, like, if you can at no cost or no harm to yourself at least alert an authority to something like that going on, you have to. So the idea that, but that's, that sort of again brings back the we talked about, like, the idea that if when there's no cost, like, it might be unreasonable to say that, like, if I walk in and see, like, I don't know, like some 300-pound bodybuilder beating up someone, I don't have any obligation to go and like try and like physically intervene. But if I can alert the police, like authorities or someone who has some ability to stop it, I do. So like, I don't have an obligation to like put myself into a danger or harm or exert any extreme cost. But the idea is that there is some low level cost, which may be dictated. You do have a duty if it means preventing a harm.
Well, what you've presented us is a legal scenario, as we established in the
morality and legality are not the same. Yeah.
Morality and legality don't, aren't the same thing. I follow you though. I think that there is an obligation to intervene, irrespective of the legal obligation.
Yeah, and I guess, like, furthermore, what, like, the moral outrage that the people, that, like, the American public had when the story broke and was publicized about this case was, like, reasonable. So to have a, like, regardless of the law, we felt something, like, there was something that ought to be done to this person for failing to meet this obligation. And so to bring it back to the case of where I come in with a three-tiered cake and eat one slice and then throw the rest away, are we willing to say that something ought to be done? Does it reach that level?
Well, I think, but the level is around the level of just talking shit about them at the water cooler. That is like an appropriate moral response to be like, this guy at least did something weird. That is a level of enforcing a norm, is just shaming that person. But
what are your thoughts?
I mean, I certainly agree that it's justified if your coworkers think you're a dick and socially ostracize you to the extent that that's appropriate. The government comes in with a fine and says, all right, if you maliciously waste food, you're going to be fined $50. Is that unreasonable?
Well, that, again, is conflating morality and legality. And if it's created in a legal way, then it is not unreasonable. But that's different than the question of whether it's moral or not. And it wouldn't impact the question of whether it's moral or not.
Okay, would you feel that's a moral thing if some governing body imposed a fine on malicious food waste?
I don't know that we even need to take that jump. I think what we can say is, like, Ben, you even started by saying it's reasonable for the coworkers to think that you're a dick. But that flies in the face of the at least the argument that I presented in the last 30 minutes or whatever, that it's not morally wrong to not do it good. It's just simply not good. And if we're saying that not only by throwing away this cake, I'm not just not a good person. I'm not like to share it would have been a good thing. Like the appropriate reaction would have been like, wow, what a nice guy shared his cake. But instead, by throwing it away, it's not that I'm just simply like nothing. It's not like it has zero impact on my social standing, but instead that it actually has a negative impact. And so for us to even say, oh, yeah, it's reasonable. He's a dick. He didn't share. He threw all that cake away. What a dick. That seems to be a reasonable thing to say. That implies that it is, in fact, a negative. Like it does, in some way, it's a moral wrong is what we have. What we're implying, even by that shaming, we're implying that there is a moral wrong there, and that flies in the face of the system of the structure that I've at least proposed previously.
Well, then I think it does have to do with it being an exceptional nature, because it's not wrong if you don't share the one cookie you brought in, but it might be if you took one bite of your cookie through the rest of the way, that's not wrong. You shouldn't be shamed for it. But a three-tiered cake that you bring in and throw away, because it's like of this ridiculous, extreme, and exceptional nature, that actually makes it a moral obligation.
So then can we extend that ridiculous extravagance to people who have a ridiculously extravagant amount of wealth, and that they have some obligation, morally speaking, to share? That seems much trickier, but it does seem to follow the same logic. Like, there's no way you could ever reasonably I was never going to eat three tiers of a cake. I mean, if I did, it would be absolutely gluttonous.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, similarly, Like, you're never going to use $1 billion. And if you do, there's a reasonable case to be said that it might be gluttonous. And so, therefore, am I a dick by not sharing my $1 billion? Have I done it wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes. I would caveat that, taxes aren't, like, there's a lot of ways around them and such, but merely paying the taxes that you owe, you at least do share somewhat. You do give back to society somewhat through that. If you were, what I would say would be absolutely immoral is, like, paying off a congressman so that you do not have to pay your fair share of taxes, or circumvent through some illicit means what you already, like, kind of owe to society. That would be, I think, obviously morally wrong, and it's still just a version of not sharing your extra wealth.
Can I present you a different experiment then, Logan?
Sure.
A slightly different modification thought experiment. Let's say we have an office potluck. And so there is a rule, a food sharing rule. But the expectation is that you bring in maybe, like, you know, 5 servings. It may be an office of 100 people, but the expectation would be unreasonable to suggest that everyone bring in, you know, 100 servings of whatever. So the expectation is you bring in 5 servings. I bring in my 3-tiered cake and give my minimum 5 servings of that cake. But I have an additional 200 servings or 300 servings. Is it reasonable then for people to think I'm a dick for not sharing those additional 300 servings? Because I think it still probably is. Like, if I have 300 slices of cake and I give my 5 that I'm required to give, but then keep the additional 295, eat one and then throw them away, or gluttonously eat all 295, it seems reasonable to me that people still call me a dick. And I think that's the same situation as this billionaire paying their taxes.
It's only unreasonable because you put the word gluttonous in it. And same with Ben's earlier example, like, it's especially a dick move to maliciously throw away whatever or maliciously waste food. But it could be that, like, hey, I brought in this for work. I didn't have the, I forgot about the potluck. I did have this 3-tiered cake that I need to take to, my kid's birthday party later. I am only going to share the 5 slices and bring the rest to that. And then they'd be like, oh, that's perfectly reasonable. And, like, maybe Bill Gates doesn't need to give all of his money to the government, but he does try to cure malaria with it, which is a good in and of itself.
Sure, but does he have, like, what you suggested is, like, a presenting of another need, a competing need. There's a competing obligation. I don't know that it would be reasonable to say that, like, Jeff Bezos has a competing obligation. I think he merely has an extremely large appetite. And if I were to say, come in with my 100, 300 slices of cake and give my required 5, and then say, hey, I'm going to eat most of these other 295 slices, you may think that that's unreasonable, but I have just an extremely large appetite. I think it might still be reasonable for the rest of the office to call me kind of, to think I'm a dick.
Look, so it is unreasonable to do things that are, like, gluttonous, or to do things with avarice, or do things that are, like, actually sinful in their own nature. But that's not the same thing. Because everybody, from our perspective, it seems like the rich don't need that money. But, like, from someone else's perspective, it probably seems like we don't need our money.
Agreed.
I think we do have an obligation to share it, but it's not that extreme. I don't know.
Ben, what are your
thoughts?
Just
be careful where you take that analogy. Yeah.
I'm kind of stuck on this. I'm not sure where we go from here, because the argument you've presented, I kind of completely agree that I think at an extraordinary amount of resource accumulation, you probably do have some positive obligation to share it. But have we just justified the shallow pond to its conclusion?
So I guess the question is at what point does, because we what we've said is that, like, if you have, if it's at a low enough cost, there's like a heap at which a low cost that's
reasonable. Is it a heap problem?
I think it is. But we're saying is there's a low cost that's reasonable and there's a high cost that's unreasonable. So, like, yes, to someone, an American middle class person's lifestyle is maybe a lifestyle of excess. And if we are able to gain that perspective and appreciate that perspective, then what is the cost to the giving, to the required giving? Like, are we someone who needs to give 5 slices and then needs, what, maybe 2 to satisfy our own appetite and then are keeping the additional 293? Or are, would giving up, would sharing those slices dramatically train, would it be a higher cost? Would we have to severely impact our way of life? Would Jeff Bezos have to severely impact his way of life by giving up, I don't know, like, at what point there, it does seem like there's a heap, like, there's a point at which you maybe have a reasonable expectation to live your life in a certain way, and then to go beyond, ask beyond that becomes unreasonable. And I don't know that we can find a defined line, but it seems like there's a degree of wealth accumulation. It seems like we can say that there is a point, whether you can define the point, but you can say, just like you can say there's a heap and there's a pile, we can say that at a certain point you have so much wealth that you are being gluttonous.
Well, I think so. I frankly, I really dislike, not dislike, but I don't believe in Peter Singer's line of thinking. So I'm going to come at it from a different angle. You remember Brothers Karamazov, when Zasimov tells the monk or whatnot, tells Alyusha, I think it was Zasimov, whatever, the head monk tells Alyusha that he ought to go out into the world. Because he's basically too good a person to just be stuck up in the monastery the whole time. That it would be a waste of his talent and, like, him being, like, such a, just a genuinely good and caring person and kind, to be stuck up in a monastery the whole time. So he sends him out into the world. So that's kind of his contribution to the society, and it's not a monetary one. Now, taking that a step further, yeah, because I haven't mentioned Adam Smith in a while, we're going to go back to the theory of moral sentiments. He says that, he's like, yeah, philosophy and, like, life generally makes it pretty clear that pursuing wealth and power and influence will not make you happy. But he argues that we owe gratitude to those who do. At least within, like, legal means, or because they actually make society better. I mean, you know, the classic line is not for the goodwill of the baker or the butcher that they provide goods to people, but out of, like, desire for wealth, well, and their own livelihood. But he's like, those who go above and beyond, we actually owe a debt of gratitude to, because they make everybody better. And similarly, Jeff Bezos probably could have worked a comfortable 9-to-5 job, like, as a consultant, making, like, $200,000 or $300,000 a year, and then fine, and had, like, a very comfortable and maybe much happier life. But instead, he decided to put a lot of personal risk into it, and create a company that impacts a lot of people and maybe in a positive way.
What did he put at risk?
Huh?
What did he risk? Yeah, but then he could still have gone back and gotten me with the other option, right? And been a consultant afterwards. If Amazon failed, he still could have gone and gotten the other comfortable job.
I mean, that's definitely easy to say, but it's a lot easier to take the $200,000 to $300,000 a year job and stick with it. You risk wasting years of your life, which is
okay. That I can, of no small value.
And he certainly put in a much greater proportion of work. Like, if one of these light switches had an electrical charge behind it, he flipped the one with the electrical charge, and it shocked him. Have they not already paid their debt to society? Alyusha's was going out into the world and participating in it. Isn't Jeff Bezos's going out and using his talents to better the world instead of sitting back and enjoying a comfortable life in his monastery or whatnot? I don't know.
I think no.
Okay.
Because I think, I don't know that I would agree that he has been proportionately rewarded for what he ventured, if that makes sense.
Well, but mind you, we know that wealth, especially extreme amounts, will bring isolation and unhappiness, and that's part of the price he pays. So he's living an unhappier life for the benefit of everybody else. Maybe not.
Yeah, but he's self-imposed
don't
that.
At all.
I don't like he volunteered for that. That's like when Ben has both switches, it's not better for him to hit the one that shocks him when the other one that doesn't shock him is also available. That's not better, actually. Mm-hmm. Provided the outcome is the same. So if you're suggesting that this extreme wealth that she strived for, that he chose to go after, is actually a negative on his life, that's what he chose. Like, there's no, I don't owe him anything for that. Just like, you guys don't owe me, because I'm participating in Lent, you don't owe me any debt of, like, gratitude for taking upon unnecessary hardship. That's absurd. Right? Is that not absurd?
No, yeah, I would agree that's absurd.
Very absurd, yeah.
But yeah. But in his scenario, it was a light switch that, you know, brought billions of dollars to him and trillions of dollars to other people that he paid and employed, and it had electrical charge behind it. That was what happened. Is he's condemned to unhappiness? Might be. He might be a perfect happy guy, but you know, that's what wealth tends to do, is make you unhappy.
I don't think I buy that.
Yeah, no. A counterfactual there is really tough to try and play out, because you always hear about people who have really entrepreneurial spirits. They think it's like a calling, and they're like, I wouldn't be fulfilled if I wasn't chasing these opportunities to make businesses. So maybe he actually would have been miserable in his life if he had just stayed in the safe salary job and felt like he was like missing out on his opportunities.
Furthermore, I don't know that he created Amazon so as to be like a public servant, but rather so as to make billions of dollars.
Yeah, but that's not a necessary thing. Oh,
I disagree. I totally do. I think the morality of it is not in terms of the consequence, but rather in terms of what your intentions are. I don't think he was his intention was to improve society. I think his intention was he saw an opportunity to make a shitload of money, and he succeeded.
I would actually disagree with that, because on every fucking college person's application to anywhere, they put that they want to make society a better place. And so at some level, literally everyone has that or at least espouses that in their lives.
Many of them are lying, I think.
I
know plenty of people here in law school who probably said they had some grand lofty ideals, but are actually trying to get the most valuable job they can get post law school. I don't think everyone's trying to be a good person all the time, though.
Hmm.
And in fact, I've actually spoken with multiple people. This is something we've talked about briefly before, but I've spoken with multiple people who feel they can strictly divorce their professional ethics from their personal ethics. And they're okay with doing something they think, what personally might think was wrong, because it's just their job to do so.
Well, in certain circumstances, that does make sense in a legal scenario. But you're obligated to defend a client who did something horrible. You're still obligated to defend the client who did something horrible.
Yeah, if you view it as like it's like a necessary evil, and then in this, you know, pursuit of some maybe larger justice. But if your goal in practicing law is just to make a lot of money, and the client that presents itself, which gives you the greatest opportunity to do that, is like someone who you think is objectively evil, I know people who would still sign on with that client.
Okay, I guess I did not consider people who really just want to do evil in the world.
Well, they're willfully ignoring that the evil that they will do in the name of another value. I don't know that they're actively trying to do harm to people. It's just that they're willfully ignoring the harm that they will do in the name of increasing their own wealth.
Well, Michael, in your moral framework, are they morally wrong?
Yes. To willfully ignore harm you will do is wrong, I think. That's why, like, drunk driving is wrong. Like, most people who are drunk driving aren't doing it so that they will hurt someone. That's their will isn't to harm other people, but their will is just to get home after a night out at the bar or whatever. But they are willfully ignoring the consequences of their actions, the potential consequences of their actions.
Well, but the guy who doesn't become a lifeguard after saving or walk by that pond every day after saving one person's life, we said wasn't doing something wrong, but he is willfully ignoring the harm that's happening.
But not that he's not causing the harm, though. He's just simply failing to prevent it. So to go back to the Spider-Man issue, actually, I think Spider-Man may be in a Jeff Bezos position where he has a gluttonous wealth of opportunity. So maybe he does have an obligation to share at least some of it. But I don't know.
It was just an epic sentence.
Because this is now a complete 180 from your beginning position where you said Spider-Man did not have more of an obligation to save people than anybody else, unless he happened to see them in passing. But he had no
right
to become Spider-Man.
I think it may be. You may have convinced me that Spider-Man does have an obligation because he is in this position of extraordinary extremity.
Well, I mean, but if we're talking now going down Peter Singer's route, if we're talking like global wealth, like we're in a top very small percentage. If you throw in everyone in the world, we qualify for an extraordinary level of wealth. I mean, I guess I would agree that we have an obligation to share some of it.
I think we may be the person who's got a 300 slices of cake.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the original question, have we convinced ourselves that high IQ person also has some obligation?
I think only extremely abnormally so. Because it doesn't seem to me that, like, the person who shows up with 10 slices of cake has to share more than their required 5. That doesn't seem unusual to me.
So, well, when we broke it down, is that we could assume that Jeff Bezos is of extraordinary intelligence. And we said that if he had settled for a normal middle-class life, he would owe no more to society than a normal middle-class person would. And that it was not better for him to aspire to greater things. And that upon succeeding, he owed a great deal more to society.
I don't concede that Jeff Bezos is extraordinarily intelligent. I can see that he's extraordinarily successful.
Okay,
and I don't know that there was a way to know that in advance.
Yeah, that's completely fair. We could imagine someone who is extraordinarily intelligent and has a reasonable chance of becoming extraordinarily successful in a similar position. And then they go off and they form the Mississippi company that's a famous distribution company over online or whatnot.
I don't know that I agree with that either, though. I don't know that extraordinary ability equates to the likelihood of extraordinary success.
Okay, there's certainly a correlation between IQ and income. That's one of the correlates.
I think greater ability maybe makes it more likely that you'll be successful, but I don't think it's like a surefire determinant of it.
That's all I mean, is it makes you more likely to be successful. As with all things, it's better to be lucky than good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah.
But that said, you have someone with an IQ of like 150 probably has many, many times greater chance of inordinate success than someone with an IQ of like 80 who could barely function.
Okay.
Do you guys remember, did you guys take AP Psych?
Yeah.
We watched a video at one point about people with super high IQ, and one of them like just became a security guard at a bar. What do we think about that person? Are we like, oh, he's kind of a dick in the same way that the person throwing away the cake was? Or is it kind of just like, oh, it's, you know, his life, he can do what he wants with it?
That may be, maybe that's the issue here, because I don't think he's a dick. Is that I don't think that ability is a resource in the same way that, like, the time of, like, in your life or money is. Right? So, like, he has the same amount of, like, in terms of, like, agency, or at least his, he may have more opportunities available to him. Like, maybe he could get a job as, you know, a high-paying engineer, or maybe he could get a job as a professor, or maybe he could get a job as a bar bouncer. He still has, like, the same number of years in his life with which to which he has to choose what to do. And so the idea that we can dictate that he has a greater obligation to spend those in a certain way because he has more options available to him, that seems, that we can dictate the finite resource of his years, or his time, because he has, I don't know. Yeah. Does that make sense?
I mean, it does, but I mean, even at extraordinary amounts of wealth, their wealth is still finite. So saying, like, you're a dick if you don't give away 1% of your billions of dollars, I'm having trouble making that distinction.
Well, maybe it's because, like, the idea that maybe we could, if we could impose a low burden onto a super intelligent person, like if we were to say, like, yeah, you can be a bouncer at a bar, but when we need this, like, code cracked, we might bring you the code and you need to crack it. Like, that doesn't seem as unreasonable. Because it's, like, the idea is that it's, like, a low cost yet again. Like, with the shallow pond, it's a low cost, is why. If you're someone who, like, also can't swim, like, the idea that you need to go in there and save this drowning person all of a sudden does not seem as obvious. It's only because it's low cost. Whereas the idea is that for someone who's a billionaire, the cost is necessarily lower. Like, $1 million is a low cost for a billionaire.
Yep. Okay. I'm with you. And so the reason then that smart people don't have any more obligation in most cases is because in almost all real life situations, there's a much higher cost to any big life decision like that.
Yeah. Like, the decision to be an engineer as opposed to a bouncer is still a very high cost decision. Yeah.
So is the exceptional nature of something merely just a reflection of an increased cost?
Well, it would still be low cost for me to alter my route that I walk every day. So say I've got two available routes, and one of which I pass by the pond where someone drowns every other week, and the other of which I don't pass by that pond, and now I'm made aware of the pond and its situation. It's a low cost for me to alter my route to instead walk by that pond every day. But it seems like we can't say that there's an obligation to do that. Maybe because the harm is while likely it's still a hypothetical harm, whereas in the drowning child scenario, we're presented with an actual imminent harm. What do we think about that?
It still feels like it's crossing the boundary into the willfully ignoring the harm of your actions.
Well, but it's my action isn't causing any harm. My taking route B that doesn't go by the pond isn't causing any harm.
Okay, it's only kind of not causing any harm. In the way that, it is an absence of a thing that would prevent harm, which is kind of a thing that causes harm. Like, you ever seen the Curb Your Enthusiasm where he didn't put a fence around his pool and was sued for it? It's the same thing. Like, there's no, you walking by that is being a fence around that pond, kind of. You are actively preventing people from being harmed.
But that's more so, that the issue there is, and I haven't seen that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, but there is a whole legal doctrine called attractive nuisance that is the same thing. And the idea is that if you have something on your property that is reasonably attractive to, like, a child, like a pool or a trampoline or something like that, then you have a responsibility to make sure it's safe or that they can't easily access it. But again, that's because, like, you are, like, the owning of the pool is the action. You are causing harm by owning the pool. The pond is different because it's not your pond. I have no obligation to put a fence around my neighbor's pool.
Well, it's a public pond. It's everybody's pond.
Right.
So it is.
But it's I strongly disagree. I don't think a public pond is the same thing as it being actually my pond. I don't exercise exclusive dominion or a reasonably exclusive dominion even.
Oh, you just have no. It's not exclusive. Just as much dominion as in everybody else.
But the pond belongs to the state, the lowercase or a uppercase S state. But the pond belongs to the state, and so the state has an obligation. The state, as a unit of all, as a conglomeration of everyone else, yes, has an obligation. So I have an obligation to maybe pay the taxes that go towards putting a fence around that pond. But I don't have an obligation, I don't think, to, because the pond is not mine. I just, like, if you have a pool that I know is dangerous, and I know that the neighbor's kid on the other side likes to come and play around your pool, I have no obligation to help you pay for the fence around your pool, right? Mm-hmm. That seems unreasonable. But yes. what if you could afford to put a fence around your pool, but you're choosing not to, but I have so much money that it's nothing for me to put a fence around your pool. Then do I have an obligation to?
No. But if it were a public pond, you might. Because in that case, it's the other person's domain completely. They actually do have exclusive domain, like you said.
What if they had given you permission? What if they said, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to pay for it. I could afford it, but I don't care. But if you'll pay for it, go ahead. You can put a fence up. Then are you a dick for not doing it? If the money's a drop in the bucket for you?
No, because they're kind of being a dick the way they said that.
They are being kind of a dick, yeah.
Yeah, because if they were... Part of the cost of the pool is the cost of securing it from
right. harm. Yes. Yeah.
They could drink it at no cost.
Yeah.
So if we put aside for a second whether or not he has a moral obligation, because in my mind it still doesn't actually matter, of a person of high intelligence pursuing something of greater value to society, it's still better for this person to not be a bartender or not be a bouncer, right? It'd be better for him to go off and use that intelligence.
It's good for him to try to help other people. If he knows a way in which he can do so better, yeah, that would be better for him to do.
So functionally, if you were that person, you would not choose to be the bartender. You would think of that.
Not necessarily. I might choose to be a bartender if I have other competing interests outside of just morality, like one of which may be my comfort. Maybe it would be a lot more work for me to go and do something else than to be a bartender. It would be a lot harder for me to do just because I'm better able to do it. It may be easier for me than someone else, but okay. It would still be difficult for me.
What if, assuming, if there were some other entity, who wanted to be a moral actor, wanted to do good things to the world, and was very intelligent, then they would not be the bartender.
Probably, yeah. If their chief goal is to be moral, and they know of two options, one of which is more moral than the other, then yes, it's more moral for them to go with the other one. It's better in line with their goals.
Well, yeah. So... Different example, along similar lines, if someone is very good at math and very bad at law or whatnot, and they wanted to be a moral actor, it would be better for them to pursue math or engineering or something along mathematical lines for them to be a lawyer, right?
It would be a higher moral value, yeah.
Right. So, we do it, then it does seem like your calling or your purpose has something to do with your aptitude.
No, I think that's a huge leap. First of all, I think that even the idea that you have a calling or purpose is a huge leap. There are maybe things which you are more or less suited for, but that you are, like, purposed by whom?
Good question. Ben, what do you think?
This feels like we might be transitioning to a completely new topic. Do we want to end this here, or do you guys want to keep going?
I think we can end here then.
Yeah, I probably need to wrap it up also. So
it seemed like we said that there is no moral obligation except to prevent harm at very low cost to yourself, especially when it is of an exceptional nature.
Likely, yes, but it seems as though, and there's some disagreement here, that in a situation of extreme excess, there may actually be extreme excess, but no need. There may be an obligation still to share.
Mm.
Like in the instance when I have 300 slices of cake and no one needs the slice. But I'm kind of a dick if I don't share.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds good. Good meeting.
Cool. All right, good talk, guys.
Thanks for coming to Philosophy Club. This episode was produced and its music was created by our super talented friend, Sam Roller.